So can we watch with all the attention? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members, good morning. My name is Lawrence van Vieren, and I'll be assisted today to my right by Mr. Ahmed Moola, and also with us today to my left is Mr. Kabelo Makitla from our parliamentary offices here in Cape Town. The purpose of today's session is to give members some introduction into the role and function of the Auditor General. And we would also like to give you some handy information today to assist you in your oversight function for the next couple of years. We would like to start off the session with a short video. It's a 10-minute video clip. It's called A Million Bags of a Million Rand. And from there on, we will go over into a slideshow presentation, which will again touch on some of the key concepts which we will show you in the video. And then we will allow some time for questions as well. Thank you very much.
Bags locked in a room under careful watch. This response after and securing these bags, the current picture is that in some cases, not much has been done to meet the promises. On the upside, others have met their share of commitment, and we commend them for building reliable systems and processes to meet their promises. While the above conclusions have been reached, it is disappointing to note that a lot of these bags have been used to promote unfair advantage and undesirable activities, resulting in an irregular and unauthorized expenditure. This is where many of the bags are found to have been used in ways that were not originally intended or with the bags made available to the public purse. This offends our sense of what is just and fair and deals a telling blow to the principles stated in our Constitution and general laws that govern public life. Limitations of an audit. These outcomes are observed and examined in an environment where the auditors have limitations. At times, they are not able to examine all the records and so apply their judgment after they have taken into account other information and knowledge which they obtain through other work in an audit. They do not profess to give absolute conclusions on the evidence they obtain through their test, but can be relied upon for a strong element of assurance in matters of integrity, governance, and accountability. The standards they apply to the records they examine carry a strong brand across many parts of the world. Any user of this information is assured that appropriate diligence, as provided for in these standards, has been applied and tried, and tested methods of independent examination have been employed. Root causes of the audit outcomes. It has been established through analysis of all the information of the financial statements reported on that there are significant root causes of the poor outcomes. Focused attention in the following areas of financial management will create a transparent and accountable execution of work. 1. We need to employ people in financial functions who have the required skills to manage finances and maintain an environment where all the records are accurate, reliable, and credible. 2. Key vacancies need to be filled, especially in the finance and service delivery position. 3. There needs to be consequences due to an undesirable audit to make sure that significant breakdowns in controls do not continue uncorrected. 4. Lastly, there needs to be a system that makes sure that those charged with oversight and governance of these entities have the abilities to correct the situation. The coexistence of the above conditions and others in any system is an indispensable part of restoring public confidence. Those charged with public affairs need to restore public confidence in their ability to look after their assets and benefits that flow from the exercise of their stewardship. When the above root causes are addressed, we should be able to experience a public service that boasts the following. A. Proper record keeping. B. Performance of daily and monthly routine controls. C. Production of regular and accurate financial and performance reports. D. Active review and monitoring of compliance. Currently, these key attributes are largely absent in the control environment of most of the entities we audit. Hence, the conclusions we have reached point to a vulnerability of these million bags of a million rand. The journey of restoring public confidence in the system of public administration, particularly financial and supply chain management, is ever more important in all the three spheres of government. Transparency and accountability are an indispensable part of this journey. If these are in place and all do the right thing, it is possible that the resources we command as a society are more than enough to achieve most of the aspirations we work and live to see realized. Auditor General, South Africa, auditing to build public confidence.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's the video clip. Would you like us to go into the slide presentation directly?
Can you just hold on for a second, because I thought we'll look at this and then go back to our agenda. Honorable members, may I find out if there are any apologies thus far? In exception of Honorable Bengo. Okay, thanks.
It's one from Honorable Machoma, who has commitment with her child.
Child is sick.
That's one.
Okay, thanks for that report. What would be the next one? May I then ask the gentleman to continue?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members. To continue in line with the video presentation that you saw and the purpose of today's session with the committee, it's important to just focus on the reputation promise of the Auditor General, and that is that the Auditor General exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in public sector through auditing and thereby building public confidence. So in practice, what it means is that we audit, our audit reports get tabled in Parliament, but then we also follow this process where we engage with the portfolio committees, where we will be sharing information with the portfolio committees. For instance, in October, it will be the BRRR process, where we will be sharing the audit outcomes with the portfolio committees. We will be discussing the root causes of the audit outcomes with the committees. We will be making some recommendations to the committees, and all of that would be to assist the committees to enable oversight throughout the quarterly engagement with the various auditees, with a view of changing the audit outcomes to where we want it to where we want it to be. I will be doing the first part of the presentation, and Mr. Mula will be doing the last part of the presentation. In brief, it's very important for committees of oversight to understand the legislative framework. First of all, the legislative framework, which relates to the Auditor General itself, is a Chapter 9 institution. And it is established in terms of Section 188 of the Constitution. And it clearly indicates that the Auditor General must audit and report on the accounts and financial statements of all government institutions. Then there's supplementary legislation, which is called the Public Audit Act. And the Public Audit Act has got some additional requirements, and it requires the Auditor General to focus during the audit on three areas. First of all, on the financial statements, we need to express an opinion on the financial statements. Does the financial statements fairly present the financial affairs of an entity? Secondly, we need to focus on compliance with laws and regulations. So we need to give a view to Parliament and to the user whether the entity has complied with material legislation. And thirdly, there's a requirement of the Public Finance Management Act that all entities should report in their annual reports on its performance against predetermined objectives. And the Auditor General must audit those reports on the predetermined objectives and report on those findings with regard to the predetermined objectives. Currently, we do not express an opinion on compliance with laws and legislation or on performance information. We just report on significant findings. We only express an opinion on the financial statements, and later in the presentation we will be taking you through those various opinions that we express. But I want to like to highlight to you that in your packs today there's what we call a mock audit report. And if you have some time, read through it, because it will help you a lot in understanding what is in and what is in an audit report. Once the annual reports have been tabled, you will have a copy of the annual reports of each of the entities in your portfolio. In that annual report, there's key information in there. For instance, the audit report the financial statements, the report of the audit committee, the report of the accounting officer. So it will help you to focus in that thick annual report what you need to have a look at from a preparation point of view. In this mock audit report, you will see that the first part on the first page basically deals with what is the responsibility of the accounting officer, what is the responsibility of the auditor general. Now, if you look at the right-hand side of the slide, you will see it starts off now with the responsibilities of the accounting officer, section 38, section 40. If you look at public entities, it's similar legislation for public entities, just different sections in the Public Finance Management Act. Section 51, general responsibilities of accounting authorities. And it would be very important for you to just have a look at those sections in the legislation to have a good understanding of what is the requirement. Legislation is very, very clear in what should an accounting officer be doing, what should an accounting authority be doing. Then there's a whole host of treasury regulations, which you will see if you look at our audit reports that we would be reporting on. We would be reporting as non-compliance with the following treasury regulations. And then when it comes to performance information, there's a couple of frameworks that has been issued by National Treasury. We use those frameworks to audit against. The entities are supposed to use those frameworks to prepare their performance information. And then there's the public service regulations, which mainly deals with the HR requirements. And you will see that in our audit reports, if there's significant non-compliance with HR requirements, we will also be reporting on that in our audit reports. For instance, one of the items that we normally report on, if vacancies is not been filled within a reasonable time, vacancies not filled within 12 months, you would see such findings in our audit report. So very important to just understand the legislative framework, because you will have to deal with it throughout your oversight period. Just the next slide, just in brief, deals with what do we as auditors do, and what do we not do. We provide assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatements. And key here is just the understanding of material misstatements. We do not guarantee that a set of financial statements is 100% correct. We do apply a principle of materiality. We report in our audit reports on the usefulness and reliability of performance information. That's the key focus when we look at the performance information. The key focus of performance information is, and Ahmed will take you through the detail, is that an entity should in the planning stages have strategic objectives, it should have targets, it will then report in its annual report against those targets. We will then during the audit process focus on that and determine whether what is reported in the annual report, whether that is in fact accurate. And therefore, key focus on reliability. And as I've indicated, we will focus on non-compliance with legislation. Once again, we do not focus on each and every piece of legislation. We do a risk assessment, and we focus on key legislation. And then we focus on internal control deficiencies. What is it that causes audit findings? And if you look at this mock audit report, and you go to the second last page, you'll see there's a heading called internal control, and it's got three subheadings. One is leadership, one is financial and performance management, and the other one is governance. So if we report something negative in the audit report, let's say there's a qualification on the audit opinion, or let's say there's non-compliance with laws and legislation, we will then in the audit report articulate which of these three areas the internal controls did not function. so that the user can actually understand what went wrong and what where focus should be placed on. If I can use an example, if we go, for instance, in this mock report to financial and performance management paragraph 55, we say the management did not implement proper record keeping in a timely manner to ensure complete, relevant and accurate information is accessible and available to support financial and performance reporting. This is, if you think back to the video clip as well, towards the end, something that we highlighted, what we tend to find in our environment when there's audit qualifications, this is one of the key controls that were actually not in place. Those day-to-day disciplines of record keeping, having those records available when we are executing the audit. I think it's very important to note that the primary responsibility of any audit is not to identify fraud, but if we do identify it throughout the audit process, we do report it to management for further follow-up. Our next slide just deals with the audit in a bit more in a bit more detail. We do the audits that we do, we call regularity audits. And I've already indicated to you that we focus on three areas: financial statements, compliance with laws and regulations, and predetermined objectives. Now, during the regularity audit process, we also make use of people that focus on information systems. In most of our environments that we audit in, there's electronic systems that are used for accounting purposes. Some entities even use electronic systems to collate and keep the information with regard to their performance information. So we need to focus on those systems. We need to determine, are those systems reliable? Does the information that go into those systems, is it accurate? Is it complete? Once you produce a report from that system, can you actually rely on that report? We can also, during our audit process, perform performance audits, and Ahmed will later on in his presentation take you through a slide which will actually show you on a very nice line-by-line basis what is the difference between a performance audit and an audit of performance information, because it's two different things. The one is, as I've indicated to you, the legislative requirement for entities to report on their performance against predetermined objectives, and that we need to audit on an annual basis. And performance audit is discretionary audits which the Auditor General can decide to focus on a specific area and issue a special report. The focus there is normally on economy, efficiency and effectiveness. We call it the three E's. Those audits are discretionary and are not mandatory like the audit of predetermined objectives. Then the Auditor General can also do investigations, but it is also discretionary. And then there's other audits that we call special audits. For instance, if a donor would give donor funding to an entity, a donor can, as part of the requirements of the donation, require that the auditors of the entity do very specific focused audit procedures on that donor funds to give the donor assurance that the funds have been used for the intended purpose. We can also do those audits. It's again discretionary, and if we do those audits, you will see in the audit report, we will write at the back of the audit report, just before we sign the audit report, we will actually have a paragraph in the audit report to explain to the user that we did issue such a special report. But those reports are not tabled in Parliament. It's reports that actually goes to the donor. We've included a slide for you on the audit regularity audit process. This is just to give you a some sense of what is it that we do during the audit process. We do a risk assessment. We cannot audit each and every transaction. So we do a risk assessment, and we are guided by that risk assessment where we should be focusing our attention during the audit process. What we also do is we agree our terms of reference with the accounting officer. We physically give a letter to the accounting officer to say to the accounting officer, this is what we will be doing during the audit, and we also agree on key time frames. As you know, and I'll show you a slide later on, the whole environment is controlled by legislation. Financial statements must be submitted by a certain time frame. We have to audit within a certain time frame, so it's very important that we agree on all those key deadlines and time frames in the engagement letter with the auditee. We will then plan the audit. We will get a proper understanding of the environment that we are auditing in. We will do the risk assessment, and we will then develop specific procedures that will enable us to focus on those specific risks. Then when it gets to the reporting phase, we prepare two key reports. The one is called the management report. The management report is not a public document. The management report is a report which only goes to the accounting officer. We then also prepare an audit report. The audit report is the public document, and that is the one that gets included in the annual report of the entity and which actually gets tabled in Parliament, and that's also the report which this committee will review as part of oversight. Those reports should all be tabled by the end of September. So there's a couple of days left for tabling. This slide just deals in a bit more detail with what is a performance audit. During a performance audit, there may be a good example that I can cite for you. Is last year, the Auditor General tabled a report on the audit of consultants. That report was a performance audit report. And the key focus there is on what we call the three E's, economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. And the focus there is, for instance, to determine that we get what we needed at the best price? Did we use it effectively? And did we actually achieve what we set out to achieve? So that is the key focus areas when we execute these performance audits. Once again, just a reminder that it's discretionary, and that you will not find it at each and every auditee. You can go to the next one. These are the important time frames. There's two cycles. At national parliament, you'll mainly deal with what we call the PFMA cycle, the Public Finance Management Act cycle. But there's another cycle which has just started recently. It's called the MFMA cycle. That's the cycle that deals with municipalities. So this slide mainly deals with what we called then the PFMA cycle. It is a requirement in terms of the Public Finance Management Act that all entities financial year in this cycle must be 31 March. So they're all aligned. And then the requirement of the legislation is that by 31 May, all these entities must submit their financial statements to the Auditor General for auditing. Or there are some entities which we call Section 4.3 entities. There are some entities that are still allowed to appoint their own auditors after consultation with the Auditor General. Even for those entities, they still have to submit their financial statements to their auditors by 31 May. There's one little difference here in that their auditors do have time until the end of August to finalize their audits, but the tabling date for all are the same, which is 30 September. Then the requirement is for national departments and provincial departments that within 2 months after receipt of the financial statements, which is 31 July, the Auditor General must have completed all the audits of those entities. In the case of public entities, we also do finalize those audits by 31 July. Key date then is the date that's coming up now, 30 September, and that is the tabling of annual reports of all entities in Parliament either provincial parliament or national parliament. And then there's a important report that we also prepared, and which is important for the committee to take note of. We are currently busy preparing what we call the general report on the 13-14 PFMA. So later in this year, sometime in November, the Auditor General will be tabling a general report on the outcomes of the whole PFMA cycle. Very good report for oversight to use. You will find in there a section dealing with each and every portfolio that we've audited. So it's summarized per ministerial portfolio. So if you have a look at there, you'll find everything together. Key summary of what are the key audit issues, very easy for you to focus on. Late in July, the previous MFMA one has been tabled in Parliament. So it's very important that the committee for oversight purposes, specifically this committee, then focus on the PFMA general report that will be tabled later in this year. I'll hand over to Mr. Moola to take us further. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, and over to you, Mr. Moola.
Thank you, Chairperson. Included in the annual report of the department, which should be available by the end of September, just before the financial statements, you'll file a very important report, and this is our report, the audit report, and it's broken up into a few sections. Lawrence went through some of them, but I'm going to take you through in a little bit more detail. You'll find it has, firstly, a report on the financial statement. This is where we've included, or where you'll see, the opinion on the financial statements. And then you'll have a report on other legal and regulatory requirements. And this is an important section because it includes the findings on predetermined objectives as well as the findings on compliance with laws and regulations. So if there's any significant non-compliance with laws and regulations, you'll find it in this in Part B. If there's any findings on performance information or predetermined objectives, any material findings, you'll find it under the report on other legal and regulatory requirements. You'll also see a section on internal control, where we'll highlight where the deficiencies were, whether they were in leadership, whether they were in financial and performance management, or they were in governance. We'll also include, if there are any other reports, we will also make reference to these reports. This slide is a very important one, and it distinguishes between the different kinds of audit opinions. And there's four different audit opinions, and the first one, and the best one, is normally the unqualified with findings on compliance and PDO. So if the opinion is unqualified, it means the financial statements give a true and fair view or presented fairly in all material respects in accordance with the applicable financial reporting framework. So this is the best audit opinion. Qualified one is that where there are errors in the financial statements. There are departures from the financial reporting framework, or there was a limitation of scope which is not so material and pervasive. Okay. A disclaimer is where the auditor has not been able to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to form an opinion. And an adverse audit opinion is the auditor disagrees with the representation made by management in the financial statements. And this is material and this is pervasive. So these are the very bad audit opinions, that is the disclaimer and adverse. Your unqualified is your most positive audit outcome. The audit of predetermined objectives, so included in the audit report, you'll see our factual findings on the audit of predetermined objectives. And when we report, we will report against, in this section, we will report on compliance with regulatory requirements with regards to predetermined objectives. And this is where we'll focus on existence and timeliness. So whether the department or the entities do have an annual performance plan, whether they do have a strategic plan, and whether these documents were approved timely and they were tabled timely. With regards to usefulness, the auditor looks whether the performance information or the predetermined objectives, rather, has been presented in terms of the framework determined by National Treasury, and whether the indicators in the annual performance plan are measurable, and whether the targets are well-defined and SMART. And we'll also look at relevance, and we'll also look at consistency between what is reported and what has been planned initially. We'll also look at the reliability. In reliability, we look at, we substantiate the actual performance reported by the department. So the department might say that they've achieved so much, and we will then go and substantiate the validity of the statement, the accuracy, and the completeness of the statement. There's significant differences between the audit of predetermined objectives and a performance audit. See, Lawrence mentioned earlier that the audit of predetermined objectives is part of the mandatory. It is mandatory that we do perform this audit. However, a performance audit is discretionary. The audit of predetermined objectives includes or reflects an opinion or conclusion on performance information, while the reporting on the performance audit is factual and does not include an audit opinion. So reporting is done annually for predetermined objectives, but for performance audit, it can cover more than one financial year. Okay? And in predetermined objectives, we will review and confirm the validity and completeness of information, whereas in a performance audit, we will evaluate the three E's, and that's economy, efficiency, and effectiveness at organizational level, program, or project level. The audit report structure, a good administration, or what is referred to as a clean audit. Well, a clean audit is an unqualified set of financial statements. The financial statements are free from any material misstatements, and there are no material findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and there are no material findings on predetermined objectives. It's clean. There are no findings. The audit opinion is unqualified. You have nothing there with regards to compliance with laws and regulations. The entity has complied significantly. There are no findings, and this is the best audit outcome, and this is what we drive at the AG, and this is why we will go out of our way to try and meet wherever possible to give you what the root causes are of the issue so we can come towards a clean audit opinion. Normally, in a good administration, the best practices are leadership that have established a culture of honesty, where leadership exercises oversight responsibility, where they approve and monitor the implementation of action plans to address internal control weaknesses, and then financial and performance management, one of the categories, is where management ensures proper record keeping of all transactions, where they provide regular, accurate, and complete financial and performance reports. They design controls to mitigate any risks. And in governance, it's very important to ensure a good administration, to ensure that we have a clean administration, clean audit reports, things run smoothly, is to ensure that risks are periodically identified, assessed, and mitigated, but also to ensure that the entity has a functioning internal audit, a functioning internal audit unit, and also an audit committee that performs its duties as required by legislation. The visibility of us beyond our mandate is we can provide the oversight committees in Parliament and all legislatures with briefings on root causes and recommendations on corrective measures to improve audit outcomes before hearings. We also consult widely with our stakeholders in the executive and legislatures prior to tabling the general report that consolidate the audit outcomes of national and provincial government. We also, the general reports are tabled in Parliament and legislatures. The role of oversight. This is a very important site. It's called a slide. It's called the oversight model. And it breaks it up into four different key components, and these are the strategic planning phase. Then we move into an operational planning and budgeting phase, the implementation and in-year monitoring, as well as end-year reporting. And the key considerations for oversight model are the areas which oversight need to focus on during these different processes or during these different stages. And strategic planning is merely to look at what are the gaps in the strategic plans? Is it aligned to all the legislative requirements? Is it aligned to the National Development Plan, National Plan of Action, to the medium-term expenditure framework? The budgeting and review considerations is very important at this stage because BRRRs will be coming up soon. And the important things to focus on here is to understand the mandate of the entity, to determine if there's adequate budget and human resources to deliver on the mandate of the department. National Department Plan, the National Development Plan, and State of the Nation Address Initiatives, are they covered? Is there a clear link between the budget and the annual performance plan? Is there adequate funding to execute the strategy? To perform trend analysis, significant to identify significant increases or decreases to look at the history of underspending and the reasons for this, to analyze prior performance against actual expenditure, to assess the breakdown of the budget, how much is being spent on administration, how much is being spent on travel and subsistence, and to ensure value for money, and the impact of financial management methods such as accruals, litigation, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. During the monitoring phase, it's important that the committee looks at if there are action plans that exist to address audit findings, to improve financial management and accountability. Are there procedures also to prevent fraud, to detect and identify fraud? And during the reporting phase is to review the annual report of the department, including the audit report, and to consider all matters in there, including non-financial information. Our contribution as the AGSA towards oversight and our audit reports to brief the portfolio committee or the committees on our audit reports before the committee compiles the BRRR report, to update on progress of current year audits, sharing of audit risks and status of key controls. We prepare short summaries of what are the key issues impacting on the department or impacting on the audit. Here we'll identify what the real root causes are, and we will identify what are the areas of intervention. Before the annual performance plans is reviewed by the portfolio committee, we will discuss the findings. We will perform a proactive audit on the annual performance plan, and we can communicate the findings. To attend and provide clarity during public hearings, to attend roadshows after the tabling of the general report, regularly follow up on the progress of resolutions, and interacts with chairpersons, hopefully and possibly on a quarterly basis, and to assist in building capacity of members via APAC. The following slide highlights key timelines, basically strategic planning between March and May, departmental briefings on a quarterly basis, the State of the Nation's address in February, budget speeches during May, and medium-term budget policy statement in September, October, and annual reports in the BRRR process during September, October. The following slide highlights the combined assurance model, and there are three assurance providers, three levels, that being management, and then the second level of assurance from internal audit to audit committees and coordinating institutions, and the third level is where the committee lies in, is that in the third level of assurance, the oversight committee required to review and monitor quarterly progress on the implementation of actions to address deficiencies. Management is your first line of defense, and they should ultimately or preferably take immediate action to address any recommendations and adhere to good financial management and internal control systems and to maintain these. So the senior management, accounting officers, and the executive authorities are your first line of defense. Then the audit committee and other monitoring institutions will step in, like internal audit and the audit committees. Internal audit will monitor risks and ensure that the corrective action is taken by management when necessary, and they'll review this on a quarterly basis. Public Accounts Committee, also the third level of assurance, will exercise oversight on a regular basis on any report which it may deem necessary. The briefing process and the tools that are used during the briefing process, the annual report, which will be available soon, included in there is our audit report, as mentioned earlier. The AGSA briefing notes, which include our root causes and recommendations, accounting officers and audit committees reports, the estimates of national expenditure, the SONA, the State of the Nation's address, and budget speeches. The briefing process, the reporting by departments and entities, they should provide reliable, accurate, and complete annual reports. The AGSA reviews the annual reports. It's critical in ensuring complete, reliable, and accurate reporting. Understanding the mandate of the entities by oversight. Oversight committees must obtain an understanding of an entity, and the annual report of the entity must be studied preferably prior to briefings and hearings. The actual briefing process, the AGSA briefing of root causes of audit outcomes. Root causes are linked to key focus areas like supply chain management, IT, performance information, and financial statements, the quality of financial statements. We will analyze and understand the root causes of the audit outcomes by oversight. Recommendations by oversight committees. Oversight committees should issue their findings and make recommendations which address the deficiencies identified by way of resolutions. They must have milestones and conform to SMART principles. In one of our handouts, we define what SMART is, what the SMART means, and basically that the principles and the recommendations should be, they should be specific. It should be measurable, achievable, relevant, and must be able to measure in, be able to be measured in terms of time, or they should have timelines. And they must send, the committee should send its reports to the executives for implementation. And consistently throughout the years, the entities must compile an action plan to address the deficiencies, and the action plans must also have deliverables and must also be SMART, and the progress on implementation of action plans. And measures to improve the audit outcome must be reported to the committee on a quarterly basis. A summary of the key applicable legislation mentioned earlier also is the Public Finance Management Act, which regulates all financial matters. The financial the framework for managing program performance information, the FMPPI. This is in terms of which the performance information is prepared. There are circulars issued in terms of the PFMA, the Treasury regulations, and instruction notes issued by the National Treasury. Chairperson, that concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much. May I ask the honourable members if there are any areas of clarity before we proceed? Honourable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask the gentleman just to repeat what the SMART principles were.
Any further questions? Honourable Grace? Are you okay? I'll be the last one to ask, but you can start with this.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. In our pack, there's a document that's got it's 5 pages, but the last 3 pages are the most important ones. It starts off with the heading Notes on the Audit Report. We've given you this document that you can use it actually throughout your whole oversight term, and we would suggest that you always keep it with you, because there's some very handy information in this document. For instance, if you look at the second page of that, or actually the last page of that document, right in the right hand corner at the bottom, there's a heading called the SMART criteria. We've included it in for you because we know that it's something that you always want to refer to. So there we've included for you the definitions of the SMART criteria. The S focuses on specific. And the definition of that is that the nature and required level of performance can be clearly identified. So it's very important that there's going to be, like Ahmed indicated for you in that table, there's going to be a time next year around about March where the committee will have to review the performance plans, the annual performance plans and the strategic plans of entities. So when you review those plans, you will focus on the SMART principles. And you will have to say to yourself, if you look at that performance measure and you look at it from a point of view, is it specific? You should also be able to determine, can you identify from this measure what will be the required level of performance? And I can assure you, honourable members, if you've got difficulty in doing that, you are right, and you should raise a question, because it should be done in a manner that everyone can understand it. It's not just for the entity to be able to understand it or for the auditors to understand it. The layman, each and every one of us, should be able to clearly understand what is it that needs to be done here. What will these funds actually be used for? I can give you a few examples. we sometimes can get measures if we review these plans that the measure will just say to influence. So how will you ultimately measure to influence? You know. So when you see those kind of measures, you should, from an oversight point of view, also indicate that you're not comfortable that it's been structured in the right way. The M is for measurable. The required performance, you should be able to measure it. Number of units, number of jobs created, number of houses built, number of grants, you know, any of those kinds of measures. And then very important, the A stands for achievable. You know, so whatever is in there must be realistic. Yes, there's a risk that you can set targets too low, and that's for the oversight committees to challenge the entities to make sure that targets are not set too low. But it ultimately must also be achievable, whatever is included in those targets. Then very important is the R stands for relevance. If you look at the mandate of the entity, you should be able to link what is in the performance information, what is in the performance target, to the specific entity. And then very important is time bound. You know that it's not to say that everything must be done in year one. Entity should have strategic plans which covers multi years, and it should have annual performance plans which covers a specific year. So it's possible that you can have something which accumulates over the number of years. Then there must be a target for year one, year two, year three, year four, year five. Or it's possible that something can start in 1 year and will only be completed in the next year. But then the ideal situation would be that there should still be some kind of measurement of what the progress would have been for year one. And then when the committees exercise the oversight, in the quarterly oversight, it's very important that you interrogate the quarterly reports on performance information and that the entities make presentations to you to say, this is what is our annual performance plan, it's quarter one now, this is what our targets were for quarter one, this is our actual achievements for quarter one, and they should be able to also link it in some way. It's not very easy, but in some way they should be able to link it to you with the program expenditure, that you will be able to see is there a relationship, is there a risk here of underspending, is there a risk here of underperformance, because there's normally, specifically at program level, there's a link between underspending and underperformance. Thank you, Chairperson.
May I just be controversial? We're talking qualified or unqualified audit. Can there be a recurrence of this? This year, it's the same report. You go through, you follow up. And you see there's no change. But the people are given the same audit report. Can you unpack that for me as a lay person? All of us.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll try my best to unpack it for you. What is important is that and that is why we've taken members through the different information that you can actually get in an audit report. So if my understanding is correctly, Chairperson, you are saying that we are reporting negatively on the same issue year on year. Am I right? And that is exactly what we don't want. We want to see an improvement in the audit outcomes. So we currently have a situation where you will find that many entities are financially unqualified. We are happy ultimately with what is in the financial statements. Most of the entities actually only get there throughout the audit process. So you will tend to find that in our audit reports we will have a paragraph to say that the entity had to make material adjustments to its financial statements to get to the unqualified audit opinion. The ideal situation in terms of the legislation is that when an entity actually presents its financial statements for auditing, that those financial statements at that point in time should already be free of any material misstatement. They should have systems and processes in place to make sure that the financial statements that they present are accurate and complete. And therefore, the focus on what we've indicated for you here, and it's also in this short summary document, the focus is here on what we call the fundamentals of internal controls. If an entity applies the fundamentals of internal controls correctly, they should be able to present a set of financial statements which is actually accurate and complete and do not need any adjustments throughout the audit process. The same with compliance with laws and regulations, and the same with performance information. So you will tend to find that specifically on performance information, that we might report year on year that an entity has got difficulty in ensuring that the performance information is useful. What we do is we do quarterly what we call key control assessments. We will focus on these key controls on a quarterly basis in all the environments where we audit, and we will actually highlight to management to say to them, there's some gaps in these internal controls. You need to focus on these controls. If you do not focus on these controls, you're going to have most probably a negative audit outcome. There will be exactly this negative reporting. So ideally, there should be improvement. There should not be recurring audit findings. So what should happen is entities should prepare after an audit cycle. We've just gone through the audit cycle now. Each and every entity that's got negative audit findings should actually have what we call an audit action plan. Plan on how to address those findings. What we also recommend is from an oversight point of view, which is that if this committee would engage with the entities on a quarterly basis, the first engagement after the reports have been tabled should be an engagement to say there were audit findings. Have a look at what was the root causes for those audit findings. As we've indicated, we will communicate with you what are the root causes. And in fact, the audit report also includes the root causes because it's there at the back under internal control deficiencies. Then the entity should be presenting a audit action plan and should give the oversight committees comfort that through that audit action plan, they will ensure that those findings will not be repeated again. Key in this is the governance part. It's the last part in these internal controls where we say the focus must be on risk assessment, internal controls and audit committees. So an entity in itself should also determine what risk do they have in their environment. Do they have a risk of not presenting their performance information in the correct manner? Do they have a risk of not having the actual information to be presented to substantiate the actual achievements in terms of the performance information? Do they have a risk of non-compliance with legislation? That should be documented. The next thing is internal audit should focus on those areas. So internal audit should already throughout the year assist management in highlighting areas and making sure that those controls are actually functioning. So that when external audit comes around, these findings or risks should have been addressed already. And then there's the audit committee, which is a committee of governance, and the audit committee should, through its oversight, also throughout the year, focus on the risk assessment, also focus on the work of internal audit, and also assure that there's enough focus on all these areas to ensure that there's no findings that would lead to any negative audit outcomes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry to be a nuisance. I'm a student here. And I believe the lecturer, who is yourself, has to come out clean. Will I be wrong then in saying if there are these recurrences, even after highlighting the important shortcomings, those people really should then be getting a disclaimer? I'm harsh, but I'm stating facts here, because I don't believe that when we are working with monies and we keep on having these recurrences, a person says we have to employ more staff, and this is a recurrence for some time, and as the AG's people, you keep on giving them a lenient sentence. That is why I say maybe I'm a bit harsh, but tell me if I'm wrong. We can't be lenient on people, because at the end of the day, the departments will actually be penalized for those shortcomings.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. It's a very valid question. I think what is important to note is that through the audit report, we actually do not give a sanction. It is an audit report that we issue in terms of our mandate, and what is very important is that there's other legislation that then needs to be applied, and that is why we, in the beginning of the presentation, focused on the PFMA. What are the requirements of the PFMA? The PFMA is very clear in Section 38, for instance, on the responsibilities of the accounting officer. So what we will do is we will highlight in the audit report the audit findings. And first of all, it would have been the responsibility of the accounting officer to prevent those findings. So if those findings then actually did take place, it means that the accounting officer was not successful in executing his responsibility in terms of the requirements of the PFMA. And that is why it's important that there's then oversight committees like the portfolio committee, and there's also other committees of parliament, like for instance SCOPA, who can then make recommendations for further action to be taken. We apply in the audit process what we call international standards of auditing. So we have to apply those standards when we audit. And those standards determine whether you get a qualified audit opinion, and Amit explained during his presentation. So if, for instance, you've got something that's materially misstated in your financial statements, but it's only one item, it will be a qualification. If it's pervasive, if there's too many items in your financial statements that are misstatements, that will render the misstatement not useful for any user, then it will be what we call a adverse opinion. So then we have to say to the user, look, you can't, we disagree with what is in that set of financial statements. You cannot rely on it at all. Or we will issue a disclaimer when we could not get information to substantiate the financial statements, but then it must be pervasive. So that's how the opinions work. It's a disclaimer. If I couldn't get information to substantiate what is in the financial statement. So I cannot, because it's the second or third year in a row that we have a challenge in a specific account balance, that I now move from a qualified to a disclaimer, because a disclaimer is more severe than a qualification. You know, we have to apply the international standards, because that also assists all users of the financial statements of any of the entities in South Africa to draw the link between the audit opinion and what is in the financial statement. So it's important that oversight takes it further once we've actually tabled those reports. Therefore, it's very important to understand the root causes. What is the root causes? And I think Chairperson highlighted one of the root causes, and we summarized them in the video clip as well. So one needs to understand what is the real issue at hand. Is it a skills issue? Is it a capacity issue? Is it purely just not acting responsibly, you know? And then to take the action in terms of the legislative requirements. For instance, if one would focus on irregular expenditure, the PFMA is very clear to say that an accounting officer must first of all prevent irregular expenditure. Then the PFMA says an accounting officer must also have controls in place to detect irregular expenditure. So if you couldn't prevent it, you must then have processes in place to detect it. Then the legislation requires, if you've detected it, you must disclose it in your financial statements. But then fourthly, there's a requirement that appropriate action should be taken against transgressors. And therefore, you will see that through our reporting process, there's more and more focus on consequence management, because we believe that consequence management does not get enough attention, and therefore we have these repeat findings. But changing the opinion to a more severe opinion will not make a difference. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member, and after her, it's me. Honourable May, after her.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out the objectives. Can the objectives of the ministry change? And what is usually the time that's allocated for them to be reviewed and decided if, you know, they've been achieved or not? And also, I realized in the budget of the ministry there was unallocated funds. Is that acceptable, to have funds that are just sitting there, not allocated, but then used at a later stage? And also regarding the policy, can the funds that are allocated for drawing up policies, can they the funds stay the same, or they need to be some kind of reduction over time? And what is the percentage usually of the reduction? Thanks.
Cheers. I'm open to correction here. But, Honourable Member, you are aware that there is an investigation concerning other things. And as it is, that area we can't actually delve into until the whole exercise has been completed. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I just hey, the light on. Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I want to respectfully disagree with you that I come from municipal background. All my life I spent there. I want to disagree with your last statement that changing the audit to a more severe audit, you know, showing that the things are getting worse, that it will not change the situation. I understand where you come from, that you are trying to change the situation by assisting. So you don't want to change that order, you know. I want to disagree with that, because many times you find that because the AG, especially at the municipal level, because the AG do not change it into a more severe auditor announcement, you find out that officials just go along, and it goes on for years, and it does nothing happen. But you must understand, politicians look at the audits, and when those audits are bad, they take action. So if you don't change your audit, and you went from qualified from unqualified to qualified to adverse audit, if you don't change it, and you can see there's problems with, because you won't change what you want to try and assist the process by resolving the problem that exists in that entity. You want to resolve the problem that exists in that entity, but it's continuing because the politicians do not realize that things are not getting well. So if you give a really adverse audit, politicians then tend to take action, and you'll see that heads will roll, their officials, action will be taken. And once officials know that action will be taken, and they're very afraid, all officials are afraid of these audits, especially at the municipal level, they're very, very afraid. And suddenly the Auditor General is a bit lenient, as the chair said, on these municipalities. Auditor General is lenient, audits are very, very lenient in these municipalities. These entities are functioning very, very badly. And that does not allow us then to take action. But if you come with a very objective, honest audit opinion, it gives us the opportunity to take action. So perhaps you need to look at both ways, both sides of the coin when you make the statement that it will not assist the situation, because that then ties our hands to take action. Right, thank you.
Honorable Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. Mine is not based on financial issues, but it's based on them being monitors of policies and acts and all that. How about them? Who monitors you as an institution? One of the things that I have observed, every time you come and give a presentation, you all men. Do you have plans in place to mentor women? In the last 20 years, how many women have you mentored? You know, and at this point in time, all government institutions are supposed to have programs in place that shows government that you are monitoring, you are mentoring women in your space. How many are you? And even in terms of equity and affirmative action, are you monitoring yourself as an institution? Because you are an institution that monitors other people. Are you compliant with what government wants you to do as the Auditor General?
Thank you, Honourable Ma'am. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm more or less... What? I'm more or less covered by the Honourable Member, but mine is to say, is there no other way where the auditors can see, how do I structure this? But what I want to say is that every time auditors come and do the presentation, there'll always be problems that have been accruing in the year. Now, is there no other way where auditors can foresee before the end of the year, as you progress on a quarterly and a half yearly measuring your doing of books? Because my worry is that every time the problem is already there, and then the consequences will have to follow. So is there no other way of restructuring to be able to help the department so that we don't accumulate problems year after year? Thank you, Chairperson.
I don't know if I...
Honourable Member?
Ngibonge sihlalo. Ngibonge futhi namakomiti lawa honourable labo bakhulumayo ngaphambili ngoba lezi zinto zempela manje sikhuluma indaba zeyimali. Ningadinwa ngikhuluma isiZulu sidalwa sami. Kuyimanje ngisenkingeni. Sisenkingeni ngomasipala ngama-legislature. Abafuni ngempela ukwenza umsebenzi, instead of that bagcine be-blame ukuthi u-government ayikho imali. Ngani umsebenzi wenu nina njengabantu labenza laba ama-audit, anikwazi ngempela ukubabhekelela ukuthi bayawenza umsebenzi uye kubantu. Even now, khona isikole njengakuthatha kuyosibona kuyimanje, iy'ngane ey'ncane zifundele eminyango, kade ngidlula kuyona nje ukuthi kulokho zana o-principal wakhona zihlele eminyango, ifundele eminyango othulini, ilanga libalele, akukho ngisho i-shelter. Kuyimanje usihlalo wami nje bengimphathele iy'thombe ukuthi ke sixoxe namhlawumbe mase kuphumela ukuthi singabasiza kanjani labantu, ngoba mina ngiyavumelana nokuthi kungcono ongenani, kuthiwa siyanikezwa thina as ama-politician ngcono noma-ke thina uqobo la, ukuthi-ke sizihambele lezi ndawo siphinde kube yisimo esizoyibambela, ngoba iy'mali ziyaphuma lana kodwa ekugcineni azifinyeleli kubantu. Umphakathi awubhenefithi, ayikho into ebuhlungu ubona ingane especially zethu thina abantu abamnyama indawo ehlezi kuzona ziyinkinga. Uthi uthi uyakhuluma kuthiwa iy'mali azikho la ephalamende, masixoxa niyafika nixoxa ngey'mali, lezi mali ezingafinyeleli ngalena. Yingakho ngithi ngokwami nje okunye ngisazoxoxa nosihlalo wami nje masesiphumela ngimkhombise iy'thombe. Kunzima eminyango bakithi, azingi izinto kubantu, zihamba igcine nganeno. Akusizi kulo sixoxa la sixoxa ngey'mali ey'nkulu, sixoxa ngoma-audit, sikhulume ngayo yonke into. Khona ubuza umbuzo lana othi ma ngabe la ma-audit niyabona ukuthi awenza umsebenzi, kungani ningafuni amanye nanaku-international? Yabo zamani bafethu asizele uzodlala lana, la sisuka khona kuyinkinga ngendlela ongazi. Ngisho amanzi abantu abanawo, imali kulokuthiwa nje azikho. Iy'ngane ey'ncane onani ezithole bekuthole amabhakethe bephuma kokha amanzi. Ngisazoxoxa nosihlalo wami kahle sengiphumile la, noma uzokwenza uzothini. Ke sibone ukuthi ngempela lezi zinto sizenza ngoba sathi ihlupha thina amakhansela, ama-province abanankinga nazo. Nami-ke zamani kubalandela laba bantu ngoba bona bavele bethi iy'mali azikho. Ulandele futhi uzwe kuthiwa hhayi sebeyaboshwa, kukhona uphenyo olukhona. Ekugcineni awulazi uphele labo lo phenyo. Umbona umuntu esihamba ngemoto enesondela emhlane. Ngiyabonga.
I can summarize this way. Her question is the same as Honorable Dirk, in a way, but she's expanded now and put in education and other issues. and the gist of the story is around the municipalities and the audit programs. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm not aware of any investigations that you're actually referring to. I just needed clarity on the question that I asked. If they don't mind, just to respond to that, please. Thanks.
It was a point of just information that we're aware of what is going on. Yeah, but at the same time, yes, I do understand because you knew. But going through the records, and you have your mentor next to you, whom I think actually now and then will give you some information as what transpired in the last term. But it's fine. I'll ask the audit people to do it. There's the last one there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Auditor General for the reports. I just wanted to get, I want to ask a question. Many of the annual reports or the reporting style of many of the departments, it's clear that their targets are not smart. I mean, it's for example, we've attended a workshop, we've submitted a report, all these, you know, it cuts across not only, you know, for example, the previous Department of Women, Children, People with Disabilities, but you often even see it in other departments, social development, et cetera. Is there an example you can give us of a department that's really done well in terms of reporting and also targets being smart that we could actually have a look at? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start off with the last one. I think it's going to be difficult to help the committee by saying, look at this department. We think these ones are you can use, because everyone differs, because everyone's got a different mandate, and that is why one should rather focus on the principles, and that is why it's important that from an oversight point of view you look at your specific environment and say to yourself, in this environment, is there alignment between the mandate and what is in here, and is this measurable for us as a committee? You must also bear in mind that on a continuous basis there is some movement in the area of performance information, where the framework changes or where there's a circular issued, so it's very difficult to say to you use a specific department as a benchmark. You know, I think that would not be the right thing to do. Measure everyone on its own. I want to. Let's start off with the first question about can objectives and strategies change. It's a very good question, because we find ourselves this year in the cycle, in a year where these things changes normally happens. So it's been an election year. Now, if you look at timeframes, just before the election, most entities, in terms of the normal legislative requirements, had to do their strategic plans and their annual performance plans. So most of them had them ready. Some of them even had them reviewed by the previous portfolio committees and even submitted them to the executive authorities for sign-off. Then it's elections. Then there's some changes. There might be a new minister, and it's possible now that there's a new focus or that there's a change in strategy. So there must be some allowance made for changes in strategies throughout the year, but it's not an ideal situation. It can happen. It should ideally happen as early as possible in the year. And very key is that any such changes must be formally approved and communicated, because even in the audit process, it creates challenges in the audit process if those changes have not been formally approved and communicated. Because then when we audit, we tend to find that an entity now actually reports on achievements. And if we go back, because what we do during the audit process, we take the annual performance plan and we verify the achievements in this annual report. Is this actually what was set out to be done in the annual performance plan, because that is what it should be. And then if it's not that, we will report on it. But if there was a change which has been approved by the executive authority, then we need to see that actual approval by the executive authority. And we actually also check that approval has been done in the financial year and not after the financial year, because you cannot after the financial year approve it. So that's actually very important, and this is one of the years, the 14-15 year, that one might see a lot of those changes happening. Very important then to make sure, from an oversight point of view, that the committees ask about those changes in the quarterly interactions.
to understand those changes and to also be able to monitor them and to make sure that they have been actually been approved. Because you might also run into a challenge with funding. That because the moment you change your objectives, you must make sure you also have funding to support those changes in objectives. The two other questions is a bit more difficult for me to respond to because I might not have enough background to it. But I think what is important to note is that in the budget process, the ideal situation is that there should be a link between the budget and the strategic objectives. That is how an ideal year should start after the budget has been approved. If there's any changes, like I said, a change in the strategic objectives or in the annual performance plan, ideally the budget should move with that. Now, accounting officers, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, do have some discretion to reallocate funds which has been approved. It's called the virement process. And accounting officers can normally shift 8% of a program value throughout the year. Then there's another time, and it's normally around about November, if I remember correctly, in the adjustment estimate, that accounting officers can do bigger shifts than the 8%, and it can then be approved by Treasury as well. So those are formal shifts in funds that can be made by accounting officers, but it's within those time frames. So what it would be key, if there's any entity that's got a challenge, that there's been a significant shift now in terms of the what is required in terms of the performance objectives for this year, and major funds must be shifted, they need to get approval for that shift now in the adjustment estimate that's coming up. That's going to be key. Honourable Member, I hear what you say in terms of the audit opinion. The more severe the audit opinion, the more severe is the reaction. I respect your view on that, and I think that is indeed what happens in practice. From an audit point of view, because we apply international auditing standards, I have to give the appropriate opinion. So if it only warrants a qualification, I can, in terms of complying with standards, I can only give a qualified audit opinion. I cannot give a disclaimer because I feel there must be a more severe reaction to this outcome. But the ideal situation is that there should not be any negative audit outcomes. We should not be accepting a qualification. We should not accept a situation in which many auditees find themselves unqualified, financially unqualified, but findings on compliance, which is typically supply chain management findings, not following supply chain management processes, or findings on performance information or other non-compliance. There shouldn't be any of that, and that is why we are saying as the Auditor General that there should be focus on all those areas to get, and that's why Amit showed the slide about what we call clean audit, clean administration. That is the ultimate objective. We should not have a situation where we say we are comfortable to live with a situation where it's financially unqualified, but there are still other items. And therefore, our view is there should be action plans, there should be consequence management to make sure that for all our audits, we have a situation where there's no findings in all three areas, no findings on compliance, no findings on performance information, and unqualified audit opinions. And therefore, key focus on those action plans to make sure that there's actually no findings that will come up in the next year. And it links to the question which was asked by the other member, what do we do throughout the year? Not that it's the function of the Auditor General, but because a couple of years we realized that the environment is not changing, we implemented the
two processes. The one is what we call the visibility program, and the other one was the focus on the key controls that I explained to you, to say that we on a quarterly basis assess the key control in each and every environment, even at municipal level. We visit each and every municipality 4 times a year. We do an assessment of the key controls. We look at what was last year's audit findings. We look at what is the current risk. And we will sit down with management at that point in time, and we will indicate to management then already to say, we are concerned there's gaps in supply chain management. There are not enough controls in supply chain management. We are concerned that there might be irregular expenditure being incurred here. We are concerned that you might not be following supply chain management process. We note that you don't have internal audit. We note that your internal audit is not effective. We will be highlighting those kind of things on a quarterly basis to management already. And then it's for management to act on it. And that's again where the MFMA and the PFMA comes into play. So we've made it, the information available to the accounting officers. It's now for the accounting officers to act on it. We then go even further. We would also engage at council level and make that information available at council level. We'll make the information available to the mayor. We'll make at national level. At provincial level, we make it available to the MECs. We have quarterly interaction with the MECs. We have quarterly interactions with the ministers, where we make those information available to the ministers and to the MECs and to the councillors and to the mayors to say, this is our assessment. These are the key areas. This is what you need to focus on. So there is enough information to work with on a quarterly basis, on a day-to-day basis, so that there should be enough focus from the accounting officers to work towards better audit outcomes. I think there was a very important question from the member about the Auditor General itself. And our role in terms of transformation, and I think there was also a specific focus on gender. Honourable Member, yes, we report to Parliament through SCOAC, the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. Our latest annual report has been tabled, and I think it's important that members also have a look at that annual report of the Auditor General, because it does contain statistics and actual information about the Auditor General, about our transformation journey, and to what extent we have already transformed. We support all the initiatives and requirements of transformation. Indeed. I think those are the key ones. If there's anyone that I missed, Chairperson, I will gladly respond.
May I then
just a follow up? I've been in government for the last 20 years. I've never seen in your delegation women presenting. If they come, they sit there, and it's you presenting all the time, and that's a worrying factor. You see? So it means, I haven't read your report, but it means that in your top level, it's always male. Either male white, either male Indian, or either male black. There's always been like that. So that's a worrying fact. You can defend yourself and say there is a report, but in practical terms, even in your delegation now, you see. So we want to see things that not only in writing, they must also be practical. Because without, and it is true, without the empowerment of women, in Europe they have always said, you can't find women being chairpersons and CEOs of companies until a minister in Finland decided to put punitive measures against companies. It's then that they found those women. And they will tell you, we can't find them anywhere. But these women have gone to school, they've done that. But no, if you are never mentored, you will never have that experience.
but it should be a concerted effort that is done by every one of us, male and female, that we must have programs in place pulling up these women. They are sitting everywhere. They are graduates. Nobody gives them any chance, you know, to get wherever you have got. It's still unfair. It's still unfair. You can't push women to the kitchen in 2011 or 2014. It is just unacceptable. Reports say something else, but in practice, I have worked with you several times. Even at Gauteng, you used to come to my committee, and you have never given me a woman to work with. Every court, I will engage a male person to work with. Thank you.
Wow. You can sleep over this. Wake up with a beautiful, bright idea in the morning. Remember, women are the pillars of any nation. What I wanted to say before that lecture, which happens to be a very good lecture, I support it. I'm not a feminist, but I'm very gender sensitive, is I hope you'll understand that we are going through a transition, and there's been a shift. So it's going to be a shift even financially, and don't hammer us on things that we're not going to be answerable to because of the shift. Talk to the mic. Try next door.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to make a follow-up on the issue that was raised by the Office of the AG to say they are conducting oversight to all the municipalities in the country. But I'm just worried about the capacity within your office. Do we have that capacity? Looking at the number of the municipalities that we're having in the country, the performance, as we're speaking, 20 years down the line, most of the municipalities, we don't see any improvement. The number of the national departments that we're having and some of the entities that you are auditing. Yes, it's not your responsibility as such, because we are thinking that we've got audit committees and internal whatever within the departments, but specifically to you, do you have that capacity? And just a comment, maybe second one to say, or just an advice, maybe just to advise this committee or myself, that in your own view, how do you rate the issue of the usage, high usage of consultants in most departments. What is your advice? Because in most departments, you can see that they use a number of consultants rather than appointing people who can be able to do that task within the department. What is your view on the matter? Thank you very much.
Honourable members, maybe we can actually have our tea whilst it's still hot. And that will also allow the gentlemen to dampen their throats. So when they come back, they give us good answers. Thank you.